Well, last week I had attempted to remember to bring the book that this Sunday school is based off of, and I forgot. This week I attempted to do the same, and I forgot. So one Sunday, I will officially be able to show you the book so you're familiar with the way it looks. And I also forgot to mention, some of you maybe have read the book or come across the book Shepherding a Child's Heart. Is that randomly familiar to you? Maybe not. Well, that's Ted Tripp, and Paul Tripp, the one who writes A Quest for More, is his brother. So there is a small connection there. Make sure I'm on. Okay. I got to say, this is the third time now that I've been through A Quest for More, that I've read through it. And there was a larger gap between this time and the last time I read it. I got to say, I was surprised reading through it this third time, seeing how many things in this book have really shaped my thinking and even shaped a lot of the wording and the phrases that I use in interacting with people and so forth. This book really has, I can kind of say, and I'm not just talking here, it really changed my life in a significant way. I want to begin today by getting some interaction from you just on a real basic level. Each of us in here, we all have different interests and different things that excite us. There are a lot of things in this world and in this life that make us go, wow, right? To give you an example, I mean, I could list a whole bunch of things that make me go, wow, but the other day, and I was watching a football game, I think, and I saw on the TV guide that there was this competition, mountain biking, downhill competition. And for those of you who don't know, perhaps I've been into mountain biking since I was about 14, 15 years old. And downhilling competitions, that really excited me. So I wanted to watch it. And what I saw, the competition was in Utah. It was on the top of this mountain. And they were going down some of the most steepest and insane things that I've ever seen, with drops that were 60 foot, 53 foot drops and 60 foot drops. And they're going down them and they're surviving. And it made me go, wow. Other things that make me go, wow. I love listening to classical guitar and listening to a really complex piece. And that's real technical. Pepe Romero does a Spanish classical guitar piece called Recuerdas de las Hambres, and I don't expect you to remember that, but it is so difficult, and I could never even hope to begin to play that, even though I'd love to be able to. I just know I can't. That song makes me go, wow. Flashback maybe about a year ago to this time, watching a particular Ravens game against the Denver Broncos. There was only, 70 seconds left or something like that. It's fourth and a whole lot longer than it needed to be. And it looks like we're going to lose the game and we're not going to make it to the next round of the playoffs. And what happens? Joe Flacco throws, a 60-yard pass to Jacoby Jones for the tying touchdown, and we went on to win the game. The mile-high miracle is what it was dubbed, right? That made me go, wow. What are some of the things that make you go, wow? Oh, come on. Go ahead.
A new child.
A new child, yeah. Yeah. That's a phenomenal experience. You're right. Having a child. What else? Give me. Seeing a waterfall that's frozen. Yeah, that's neat, isn't it? Yeah. Makes you go, wow. What else? Come on, everybody should be able to say something here. This is just what you personally enjoy. Come on. Fabrics. Yeah, you know what? It doesn't wow me, but I'm not kidding. In a quest for more, he gives examples like that. And one of the things he was that beaded wedding gown with, you know, that makes you go wow. Yeah, exactly. You know, we're all different. What else? Anything else? Timmy, what makes you go wow? Watching lacrosse games. Yeah. Watching the athleticism, scoring a goal, right? I mean, that's wow. Yeah. It's as if humans were created to be wowed, right? I mean, otherwise, why would we do some of the things that we do that in many cases are unnecessary? It's totally unnecessary for Travis Pastrana to do a double backflip on a motorcycle. But he did that a few years back. And it made us go, wow. It's like we were made to go, wow. The reality is, it's like we were made to go, wow. We really were. It's part of humanity. It's part of who we are. Let me ask you this question. Is it possible that being wowed by these other parts of life that we just mentioned in others, could that become a detriment to a Christian? No. We have one no. That's great. Is it possible to be so focused on those things that wow us that it distracts us from what true Christianity is all about? Yeah, absolutely. Now, those things in and of themselves aren't bad, aren't wrong. It becomes a detriment to a Christian when we have allowed those things to dominate our lives. And when that takes place, it doesn't leave any other part of us to be wowed by who we're truly to be wowed by. And that would be God. Because isn't God truly greater than all of those things that we've mentioned? Yes. So then the question becomes, why is it then that... I'm not meddling here in any way, but let's just think about this on a practical level. I'll use my personal example. When I was watching that Ravens game a year or so ago, my family and myself were jumping up and down and giving each other high fives, screaming our heads off. I think we woke the kids up. Okay, it was a big deal. And yet, when we're singing in church, and we've opened our hymnals, it's really none of that. Now, I'm not saying we go charismatic or anything like that. But is our worship of God and is our perception of God so dry that there isn't any emotion, that there isn't any desire and thought that goes towards this God that created us and created everything that we saw? And then to think about what He's done for us on a personal level in salvation. Is our Christianity just this dry, baseless, well, I spent my time in church and now I'm going to go do something that I'm really wowed by? Why aren't we wowed by God more than we are? Do you have any thoughts on that? Why aren't we wowed by God more than we are? Any ideas? Is it possible that it's because our view of this God is skewed to some degree? Is it because possibly that we don't see Him for who He truly is? Do we have a God who is big or who is small? Big, right? He is a big God. And yet, in practical Christianity, if you were to view a believer's life, what view of God would you get from his life? What view of God would someone get if they saw your life? A view of a small God or a big God? We've mentioned that the purpose of this Sunday school is to learn how to pursue excellence in the Christian life. And each, Lord willing, each Sunday school lesson will be devoted to a particular key to pursuing the excellent life, to pursue excellence. And I'm going to get to that key today in just a little while. But I want to give you some food for thought as we consider what this key, this first key to pursuing excellence is. Let me ask you this question. You don't have to answer it, but just think about it. Is God bigger than the universe, or is He smaller than the universe? Is He bigger or smaller? If you're thinking bigger, if you're saying bigger, you're right. You know, I can remember growing up, I had this misconception as a little kid that, you know, as I was piecing things together from what my parents were teaching me and Sunday school and so forth, I had this idea that, well, the universe kind of just existed always, and God made our particular area of the galaxy and so forth, and He just sort of resides in the universe, and He's focused His attention on this particular area. And that's not a terrible mistake as a kid, perhaps, but it does bring God to a smaller level than He really is. No, God created the entire universe, everything that's in it. The universe had a beginning, and it will have an end as well. He made it all, everything inside it. Is it really that amazing what God has done? Is it really that amazing what God has created? Is it really that amazing what He is still doing in the universe as a whole and in our particular corner of it? God created this world. He created our solar system, our sun with the planets that go around it. He created our galaxy and all that's in it. You know, if you read anything astronomically speaking, there may come a point where you kind of realize, I have no idea what these people are talking about. Because the objects and the distances in space are so vast and so huge that it's hard for us to comprehend. And remember, this is the stuff that God made. And He made it in such a way that it's difficult to wrap our minds around. Typically, when they talk about distances in space, they use this term called light year. So many light years, back and forth, so forth. Does anyone know what a light year is?
186 miles per hour per second, something like that.
That's the speed of light, yeah. In 1 year, that's right, yes. Yes. I had no idea what that was, so I looked it up. The distance that light can travel in 1 year is 5.88 trillion miles. You know how large our particular galaxy is? It is 100,000 light years across. That's big. I mean, we would, just for a slight reference, we would consider our Earth pretty big, wouldn't it? Wouldn't we? I mean, it's it's a nice big ball that has a lot on it. And it takes us a while to get from here to Kansas, you know, in a car, traveling at highway speed. The circumference of our Earth at the equator, it is a meager, it's not even quite 25,000 miles. Light would shoot around that, boom! I mean, it would be done, and it'd be going in that amount of time. That's almost unfathomable. And in this particular galaxy that we reside in, the Milky Way galaxy, contains roughly 200 billion stars. 200 billion stars. Most of the stars are located in the disk of the galaxy. Meant to get a cup. I don't have one with me, but most of you know what a cup looks like, so that's okay. As we think of this concept of our galaxy being 100,000 light years across, I don't know about you, but that means absolutely nothing to me. I mean, that sounds big. How big is that? Well, did you know that if we were to shrink the size of our particular solar system to the size of a common cup, okay, you following with me? We shrunk it down. Our sun, with its planets, shrunk down to the size of a cup. So that would mean that the sun is in the center of that cup, and the orbit of Pluto, which I know has been downgraded, it's not a planet anymore, sorry Pluto, but we're using that orbit, Pluto's orbit would be the outer rim of that cup. So here, if you have your cup, you can look at it. I mean, these planets would just be specks, right? I mean, if we could see them at all, if they were that small, right? If we were to scale everything down then, our solar system is that small now, and we were to scale the Milky Way galaxy down to the same size in comparison to our solar system, the Milky Way galaxy would stretch. Would stretch just beyond the east and west coasts of the United States of America. And from north to south, it would run well into the northernmost parts of Canada and the southernmost parts of Mexico. Let that sink in for a little bit, because we're not done. It'll catch up eventually. Yeah. My. There we go. That's beautiful, isn't it? It's called the Eagle Nebula. I think, if I remember correctly, it was discovered in recent history. It's not been known for a while, that long. The Eagle Nebula. Very, very striking as you look at the different pillars, as they're called, or the towers that they are, that you see there. Let's say that we were to take the leftmost, the tallest tower there on the left, and if we were to shrink that to the size of the Empire State Building, okay? Our sun, if we were to shrink it all down, our sun would be a speck of dust next to it. Speck of dust. But our sun is huge, right? I mean, I looked it up. I went to AskAnAstrophysicist.com. And he says that 1 million Earths would fit inside of the sun, roughly. And next to that thing, our sun is only a speck of dust. That's remarkable. I mean, we're talking about distances and measurements that are ridiculous. I'm not sure how well this is going to work with the delay, but we'll give it a try. I have a short video to show you here. You'll have to excuse the different...
Here's a question for you.
The different... billions of years and things of that. But if you can get past all that, I think you'll enjoy seeing some of what they say here. I'm sorry? I don't know. Yeah, well, I can't get this to work because it's a Mac. So... Unbelievable. Ah. Maybe then I can simply do this. Find a picture. I apologize for the delay. The link that was there.
I'll get it for you.
I have it up right there. I just don't know how to highlight it, copy it, and paste it to.
Let me just do this.
That's not the video.
That's not?
No, it was only a 4-minute video.
That's odd. Let's reinitialize it. Okay, that should be it.
That's it.
Except this is an error code. Well, please try again later.
Okay. No problem. We'll just move on. Again, I apologize. Should have known better than to deal with any technological thing. But we got the picture in, so that's good. What I wanted to show you was a... I can talk about it. The Hubble telescope was basically... Somebody bought time on the Hubble to take pictures of areas in the sky that they had never taken before, and to the naked eye and even just less powerful telescopes, they looked at these blank areas in space and decided, you know what, let's just see what we find. We'll point the telescope in that little window of space that we see nothing, and let's see what happens. So they left the shutter open for days. And remember, I mean, this is expensive. The video talked about how it was a pretty great risk to do that. You're using all this money and you might find nothing. Well, they left it open for days, and what they found was what is known now as the Hubble Deep Field. And in that picture, you see all of these bright objects in there. And at a cursory glance, all it would look like is just stars. But the remarkable thing is every single speck of light that you see in that picture is a galaxy. Some of them bigger than Milky Way, some of them smaller, but each and every one a galaxy. Let me give you at least, I can at least show this to you. This is the picture that it took. That is the Hubble Deep Field. One infinitesimal corner of the space, each and every speck a galaxy. Remarkable, isn't it? Hopefully, even though we had a little bit of a delay and so forth, hopefully not only did you just go, wow, at the vastness of space, but you went, wow, and were in awe of the God that just created all of that with His Word. What is the right conclusion? What is the right response to this? How do we go from here? Well, we must consider that not only that God created all of that and more, because not only did God create the expanse and vastness of space with the gas and the nebulas and the galaxies and all of that, and these almost immeasurable objects, when you go to this planet itself and the different things that He created here, I mean, the human body itself is a work of art, how it worked. You go from those gargantuan things to the tiny microscopic life forms that even these single cell organisms are immeasurably complex. Scientists are baffled, and they claim to know so much, but they don't. They're baffled by these tiny, tiny creatures. Not only did God create all of that, but He sustains it as well. Colossians 1:15 through 17 says, speaking of Christ specifically, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn or the preeminent one of every creature. For by Him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth. Heaven, that's space. The heavens that are in earth, visible and invisible, where they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by Him and for Him. And He is before all things. And catch this. And by Him all things consist. That word consist, it means it's sustained or held together. Did you know that as they use the Hubble telescope and other high-powered telescopes in space, when they are viewing these images of these distant objects, they recognize that they are moving away from us at an incredible rate, actually. They're getting farther and farther from us. And as they've looked all around, they see this one same thing. Everything is moving out. Now, they will attribute it to the Big Bang, when everything exploded and boom, everything went out, and so forth. And they say a very interesting thing when they talk about that. You know what they say, these scientists? They declare that at the point of the Big Bang, if the rate of expansion was any slower than it was, then it all would have come back and collapsed on itself. And nothing that we see would have ever come together. And likewise, if the expansion was faster than what we see right now, everything would have disintegrated. It wouldn't have held together. It wouldn't have been able to exist at that rate, and it would have just been obliterated. Well, that's a really narrow window, isn't it? Gee, I'm sure glad that that worked out by chance. No. No. Folks, the Big Bang is when God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And boom, He created all that we see. In the beginning, God created the heavens, space, and everything in it. and the earth, this planet that we live on and everything in it. It was Him. He is the first cause. The contents of space and our solar system and all that's in there, so huge, so massive. What can we conclude from learning these things? Well, number one, yes, our God is an amazing God. Hardly comprehensible. He is outside of this universe that He created, and He created it and sustains it, holds it together. The logical conclusion that we can come to, we are specks. We are specks on a speck. Actually, we are just a bunch of specks walking on this particular speck called Earth that is revolving around this other burning speck that we call the sun. That's part of a billion, billions of specks in this galaxy we call the Milky Way galaxy, which is just one galaxy of an estimated millions of galaxies that are out there in the universe. We are specks. Nothing more. It's no wonder the psalmist declares in Psalm 8, verse 3 to verse 9, "When I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? And what is the son of man that thou visitest him?"
What's our speaking and new language in just 10 days?
It's okay. Of course I do. Appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. That's okay. The psalmist gets it right, doesn't he? When I consider everything that I see in this creation, the work of thy fingers, why do you even give me the time of day? Why do we even bother? And this brings us to our first key to pursuing excellence. The first key to pursuing excellence is one that adopts a correct view of God and a correct view of self. A correct view of God, a correct view of self. This is very countercultural because our culture teaches us that we are to look out for number one, primarily. We're supposed to have a high self-esteem. But folks, as we, as believers, we are supposed to recognize our rightful place before God. The pursuit of excellence adopts a correct view of God and a correct view of self. The view of God is one that views Him as high and exalted, sitting supreme on His throne as God of the universe. And the view of self would be one that is low, one that is subordinate to our God. That's what the psalmist is saying in humility. What is man that thou art mindful of him? We have nothing to boast about, nothing to brag about, nothing to think highly about in ourselves. And this is the most remarkable part of it all, though, and the psalmist mentions it. Even in our lowly estate, this God of the universe that spoke everything into existence seeks to save us, have a relationship with us, and beyond that, eventually take us to a new heaven and a new earth to be with Him forever. In our final moments this morning, what can we do to adopt a correct view of God and a view of self? Well, hopefully, if you haven't thought about this in a while or maybe ever, this Sunday school helped you in that area to recognize how small we are and how big God is. But it begins really with an acknowledgement of this God's presence in our lives. How much do we do in a day that in which we disregard God's existence or even influence in our lives? We need to begin the day with Him, continue the day with Him, end the day with Him. We do this by being in prayer, by being in His Word. When we read His Word, we will adopt a correct view of God and a correct view of ourselves. It helps often to read God-exalting psalms like Psalm 8. And to see the wording that the psalms use. You know, they use wow language when they talk about their God in the Psalms. They use wow language. And we would do well to learn the language that expresses that awe and amazement of our own God. We need to cultivate that correct view of God and that correct view of self. God, as God is lifted up more and more and more in our minds, naturally we will diminish in our own minds. As we see, as the vastness and greatness of God fills our minds, there is not enough room for us to have a high view of ourselves. He fills it all. This is the first and vital key to the pursuit of excellence in the Christian life. When we see what God has done in creation, it's obvious that God is capable of great things. Is God capable of great things through you? What do you think God wants to do through your life? Could He do it? It really depends on how big you believe your God to be. And how you view yourself to be. Let's pray. Father, I thank You for a time where we can spend looking at Your creation in a deeper and more detailed way. And Lord, I ask that we would maintain a high and exalted view of You. I pray that we would not go through this morning unmoved by Your majesty and Your glory. Lord, help us. Help us not to see ourselves as more than we are. And help us to see You in all Your glory, in all Your majesty, in all that You truly are. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.